Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotureau, the chef in hat.
Thank you once again for joining us, as you have been, many of you, for almost 20 years now. We've been doing this show. It plays here on Cairo on Saturdays and Sundays. We're thrilled that you're listening. We hope you're in your gardens, wrapping up things for the year, turning it over, planting some cover crop, in your kitchen, canning and preserving all those things that you grew that you have too much of now.
Yeah, tons of it.
We're just making persimmon,
quince.
Quince jelly out of all of our quinces from our, actually from our yard in Ballard.
Yeah.
The quinces are beautiful this year, so fragrant and lovely. And you are the chef in the chapeau.
I'm
and
the
have
chef in the hat, and I have a restaurant in Madison Valley open right now for dining and for takeout. Luke at 28 and Madison, and we'll open Wednesday through Sunday.
And, of course, I have a couple of restaurants going right now. We have Seatown down in the Pike Place Market. Man, I am loving our new chicken pot pie. It is so tasty. It's very classic, and we have that both to eat there in the restaurant now. We actually moved indoors.
Right.
And we also have a box to take home, so it's going to be fun. Let you know more about that later. We also have Serious Takeout in Ballard, 52nd and 14th Avenue Northwest, and, of course, Serious Pie downtown
and I must
between
say
3rd
for
and 4th on Virginia.
For anybody who loves Tom Douglas, you definitely have to go to the website because there is a lot going on. Those girls of yours are busy. They make
they're
a
ladies.
Lot of things happen.
They're ladies, and
they are
feisty, and that's why when you look at our West Wing box, you'll see how feisty they are and all the names of the different dishes. You know, we're celebrating the West Wing return. There's a reunion show, and I'm not sure what station is playing All of Madeline. Do you know?
It's HBO Max.
HBO Max.
On Thursday. Well, it's, I think it airs
all of the seasons.
They're playing all the seasons I know on Netflix. This reunion special is just airing on HBO Max, okay. And I believe it premieres this week, but you'll be able to probably watch it on demand throughout the rest of the month.
I'm going to have to come to your house and watch it. I'm too cheap. You know, I signed up for Disney Plus for Hamilton, so that's all the money I have for TV expenditures.
Especially because it's one show and then you're down.
Well, I watched it six times. I got my $6.99 worth. anyway, that's Madeline, our producer. She sometimes does a good job. Mm-hmm. Other times, she's just feisty and
just
yells
sometimes.
At me.
Does always a great job sometimes.
Most times.
Exactly. We have a big show for you today. Our Seafood 101 segment is back with Delmas Whitaker from the Fisherman's Terminal and Maritime Industrial Center. We have soup chef extraordinaire Carolyn Wright. I had her vegan soup. She brought us 4 quarts of soup for our team to have lunch a couple of weeks ago, and mighty delicious.
Super tasty.
Amy is back to torture us this time. She's not really torturing us this time. She's just kind of presenting what's out there as far as vegan cheeses go. Because, you know, when we do all of our stuff, there's so many vegans now that the marketplace is flooded with opportunity to eliminate dairy from your diet. So we're going to check in and do a little Hot Stove Society tasting panel on those cheeses.
Right. And this is not just eliminating, it's replacing it.
Right. Right. And you could, even if you do eat a dairy, you might want one of these instead.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a tasting panel on that. We're going to revisit another city we missed traveling to. Last week it was New Orleans. This week, we're going to talk a little bit about Chicago.
Love Chicago.
My little favorite restaurant in Chicago. I don't think you would guess. It's French. The name is French.
Favorite? Well, I know what mine is. La Sardine.
No, it's not
Le
that.
Le Bouchon.
No, it's not that. Avec.
Avec. Oh, yes, of course.
I love that little restaurant.
That's actually a great restaurant.
I like sitting at the counter right in front of the wood-fired oven. Brittany Bartleben, yay! The pastry chef is back in the house. She's now not with us anymore at the Dahlia. She is with Metropolitan Markets, and we're going to talk about cheddar and apples. Do they really go together? And, of course, lastly, we're going to finish up with our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge, which I hope Brittany stays for.
Well, she will.
She will. She's
she likes
very
a challenge.
that's brought to you by Rub with Love. Handcrafted, versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add a flavorful kick. And a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. Okay, something you enjoyed this week, sir. What is your taste of the week?
Taste of the week.
Don't act so despondent. Was it that bad?
No, I was thinking about it on the way here. I was like, what is my taste of the week that I can feel like, you know, I usually the test of the week, it's either you went out somewhere. And I revisited Bubba with my bowl of pho this week for the first time in 6 months.
Yay.
Oh, my God. Thank you for making such a beautiful oxtail pho.
Uh-huh.
And I took it to go because I was in a hurry and rushed home, which is only a five-minute drive.
So funny. I don't think of you being a to-go guy.
I'm not, but yeah. I was on a rush, and I really wanted it. I was, like, salivating. I stopped at the hardware store on 12 on Capitol Hill, and then I was rushing back to Luke. And I'm like, oh, God, I got to have that. I got to have it. I mean, I haven't had it in 6 months. So I called them and stopped right in, came right out. And 5 minutes later, I was sitting down having the bowl of that I love so much. And again, talking about this quickly here, the one thing that keeps bugging me, you know, to go is great. And some things do better to go than others. This is fine. The food is fine. But it, you know what? There's nothing better than sitting at a restaurant table and have somebody bring you a bowl of pho.
Yeah, with it kind of just steaming and coming to your table. Yeah, and all of a sudden, you just put your face in the bowl, like above the bowl, and get a little pho facial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as much as I love my pho because I was missing it, it's just not the same.
You know, I bought a pho, like a dried soup pho, the kind in the cups where you just add the hot water.
Uh-huh.
And I was craving it the other day, too, but I was at home, and I had this sitting in the drawer for maybe 6 months. I don't know how long it's been there, but so I got it out, and I kind of got that feeling like I'm ready for a big bowl of steamy hot pho. And it was not very good. I'm not going to say the brand, but it just was
not so good.
Hit the spot that I was looking for.
Yeah, I mean.
My taste of the week here, let me do mine before we run out of time. We're finalizing all the stuff at the farm, right? All the funky looking tomatoes, all the peppers, the last of the garlic, sweet onions. And I had this, I did a 10-pound leg of lamb from rock solid frozen on my charcoal grill at the farm this week.
Ooh, and that's ambitious.
Just put it on at 10:30 in the morning, pulled it off at 5:30 at night. It was 128 degrees in the center. It was perfect. But it was huge, and there were only four or five of us.
So what's the heat on that?
So I had all the extra meat left over, right? So it's smoky lamb meat. So we took half of that I gave to Dev, and he made a little onion curry.
Uh-huh.
The other half I brought home, and I pureed all the green peppers, red peppers, yellow peppers, all the funky tomatoes, all the onions, the garlic. Actually, I browned the onions in the pan. Pureed everything, put in a jar of Don Torrio's mole sauce or something like that, and a jar of two half jars of salsa that I had in the fridge. Just put it all into the Vitamix blender, pureed it up, poured it in over my lamb and my browned onions, and made a little mole.
Dang, and that sounds good.
It was actually really good, and without adding any chocolate to it, it tasted kind of chocolatey. Tasted delicious, but I'm sure there was some problem
in the one you added.
Canned mole sauce. It comes in a juice glass. This mole keeps giving and giving and giving. Wow. Remember, like, the Kraft pimento cheese used to come in a juice glass?
No, I don't remember.
Yeah, well, I do. I grew up with that stuff. And so now, not only do I have a nice mole in my freezer, but I also have a nice new juice glass.
And you still have lamb, right? You didn't eat everything, did you?
No, I still got plenty of it.
Yeah.
I larded my freezer. Up next, Delmas Whitaker is here. He's going to talk about October being National Seafood Month, and we're going to celebrate chatting to him. He runs the Fisherman's Terminal in the Hot Stove Society Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show on Cairo Radio. Tom Douglas is right here.
Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat, also here.
To celebrate local fishing organizations, the Port of Seattle and the Seattle Propeller Club have joined together through Seafood 101. The campaign is a list of goals of to encourage folks to eat more seafood and discover its nutritional value, to highlight the commitment to sustainability, and to celebrate the economic value of the maritime and fishing industries. And so that's why we've invited Delmas Whitaker back onto the show. He's been here before to talk about what's going on a Fisherman's Terminal. And I want the inside scoop. I go to the Fisherman's Terminal all the time. I go to the Bay Cafe, maybe probably once a week, once every other week, something like that. And I want to know, I'm going to ask Delmas a question when he gets on. Welcome to the show, Delmas. How are you?
I'm doing great, Tom. Chef, great to see you, hear you. I wish I was in the studio with you today.
I know.
Yeah.
I would have hoped that you would have brought something from the terminal with you. We could have popped some oysters or eaten some salmon off one of the boats.
Yeah, so, this year COVID is giving us a run for our money.
Yep. So Dumas oversees the leadership and day-to-day operations of Fisherman's Terminal and the Maritime Industrial Center, and joined the division of the from the Port of Seattle SeaTac International Airport, where he spent the past 10 years in aviation maintenance. So Dumas, what exactly do you do every day out there, and why is the port there in Ballard so important to our city?
Well, thanks, Tom. I will tell you, I do what I do every day is I just support the men and women that do their best to support the over 300 commercial fishing vessels that we have at Fisherman's Terminal that support, bringing fresh seafood somewhere in the rounds of about 1.3 million metric tons from the North Pacific fisheries. We're doing what we can to support those men and women go out and fish those Alaskan waters for us.
It's astonishing. 13% of the seafood in America comes through this particular fishing fleet, the Seattle, Alaska fishing fleet. That's a huge number when you consider the world of fish and, you know, how much Asia consumes and how much, we consume here in the States. Just think about McDonald's Filet-O-Fish. That's a lot of fish.
Yeah, absolutely. And in addition to all of that fish, it also helps, bring a lot of revenue to the surrounding areas. And through some of our studies, we've looked at about $671 million back in business output, as a result of, these operations. And it is phenomenal.
Yeah. You know, we've been fighting the Pebble Mine for years now, and it reminds me so much of when you talk about we went just from $270-some million worth of fish to the overall economic impact of the whole fleet and the maintenance and the families. And certainly that doesn't even really include what we charge for a piece of salmon at one of our restaurants and, all the value that it brings there. But we talk about that in relationship to Pebble Mine. It's like the fishing jobs in Alaska are so valuable, so much more valuable than just the value of the fish itself.
Yeah, it's part of our heritage, and we better not lose that. Mm-hmm. That's one of the few things we have left that's still intact.
Yeah, I agree. Tom, I will tell you, this fleet, helps support about, roughly 7,000 plus jobs every day here in Seattle. And when you talk about the money and the opportunities that the fishing industry provides us, it really plays an important part in our city as well as as you mentioned making sure that we're getting seafood around our country.
Let's jump right into the terminal itself, because it's one of the places in Seattle that just doesn't get as many visitors as it deserves way. It's so fun to walk the docks, so beautiful to sit there in some of the restaurants that are at the Fisherman's Terminal and sit out and enjoy the view and the birds and hear the seals and all the things that go on at that terminal, watch the shipping traffic. You forget that it's even there, and it's such a cool thing. So, Dumas, I'm assuming your office is right there at the terminal?
Yes, it is. I'm right at the Central Plaza, and so I have a bird's eye view of the fishing fleet from my window, which is what I would consider one of the best seats in the house. But you're right; we really do encourage folks, and especially during this time of COVID, continue to come out and see our facility and walk amongst our. This is a working waterfront, so our fishers are. Matter of fact, just the other day, we're out pulling nets and actually loading some nets on one of the vessels. And so it is an operational facility. We obviously want folks, as they're on the facility, to be responsible, masked up, and, exercise your social distancing. But we encourage folks to visit our restaurants, As you're aware, Bay Cafe is serving responsibly, and also Chinooks, Little Chinooks is doing business, Green Market, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention Wild Salmon. You know, make an opportunity to get some fresh seafood from our seafood provider.
Yeah, you know, we talk about that all the time about the Pike Place Market, but you can do a lot of good work in one day at Fisherman's Terminal. When you think about stopping in at Wild Salmon Fish Market, they have a great selection. Not to mention, they have a really cool line of Rub with Love on their counter there.
Ding, ding.
Dulles, you have to, we only have 2 minutes, so you have to tell me quickly. I know, I'm going to tell you, I go for the smoked salmon omelet at the Bay Cafe. What's your go-to? There's a pub there. Is it called the Highliner Pub? What is the name of that pub?
Yes, the Highliner.
The Highliner. Yes, I have the BLT there. What's your go-to at Chinook's, the restaurant Chinook?
At Chinook, I would say they have their beer battered cod there. I love that, it is. I'm cool with the fries. I really enjoyed that, and that's the only place too that you can get that nice bread. The great bread that they have there.
Madeline was just talking about that before the show about how much she loves their focaccia.
It's my favorite bread in the city. I'm pretty sure my children eat their weight in that focaccia there.
I love it. Yes.
Well, I like the scones at brunch, personally. Those, if I'm going to have bread, that's what I'm going to have there. Dulles Whitaker has been our guest. He's out there running Fisherman's Terminal. Get out there and check it out. It's, you know, the memorial to fishermen lost at sea is worth the trip.
And go buy some fish.
And it's
go
free
buy some
parking.
Fresh,
there's
beautiful.
There's lots of things going on out there. Places to eat outdoors. Like I said, I go there once a week, so I'm thrilled to highlight that. Thank you, Dulles, and we will talk again. Maybe next October.
I look forward to it.
All right.
Cheers. I look forward to it, sir.
Keep up the good work.
Madeline, that is so funny that he would mention that bread that you were so goo-goo-gaga over.
It's my favorite. It's one of my favorite.
All right. Up next in the Hot Stove Society Radio Show, it's time for the Hot Stove Society Tasting Panel on Vegan Cheeses on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Here we are. We're back in the Hot Stove Society kitchen, and now we're doing what we do best here at the Hot Stove. We're eating.
Yes.
Right, Chef?
We're testing.
We're testing. We're eating, We're eating.
Yeah, we're eating.
I'm Tom Dulles.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And Amy, one of our producers, is going to come on and tell us what we are eating, because we have literally a smorgasbord in front of us of different cheese things or cheese-like things.
Correct.
Yes. So what do we have here, Ames?
All right. Well, when we were thinking about this segment, this was the number one requested item to taste you on with non-dairy cheeses and other vegan dairy products. So we brought in some soft vegan cheeses and then some products that have non-dairy cheeses in them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's... health reasons, environmental reasons, why a lot of people are eating dairy-free now. And it was pretty fun to go through all these products.
So there's such a variety here. There's 9 different opportunities for us to taste.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Yes, you got it.
And so you've taken some of the products, which are more melty type cheeses,
yes,
and you've made them into things where that might be appropriate. For example, we have 2 different grilled cheese sandwiches. Both, by the way, very thoughtfully griddled with Earth Balance organic whipped buttery spread.
Yes,
which is vegan also, right? So
it is.
And
it
then
is.
So we have our Follow Your Heart American style dairy free slices.
Mm-hmm.
A local company, Field Roast, their vegan chow slices, which is creamy original with chow tofu.
Yeah,
it says it's a product of Greece. Did you see that?
I did see that. I thought that was really interesting. This is the only product on your tasting panel that has fermented tofu. A lot of these are nuts and coconut oil, but that uses tofu.
Wow. So they're actually just bringing that in themselves and then selling it. We have Rhodes End Organic Shells and Cherries, which is C-H-R-E-E-S. E-E-S-E. They probably can't, by law, call it cheese.
Correct.
Right? So we actually have mac and cheese, basically. And then we have Daiya, D-A-I-Y-A, deliciously dairy-free, cheddar-style, cutting board collection shreds.
Yes, yes.
That's a lot of words.
I like the cutting board part.
And you'll see that company, they do lots of different products, like cream cheeses, cheese sticks, sauces, burritos, desserts. The Daiya.
Okay, Terry, so you go through the other cheeses. Now, that was the melty style. Now you've got more what we would call cheese board cheeses.
Yeah, I would put those on a cheese board. And just so it's clear, I've tried them all from 0 to 9. And I'm quite impressed.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed. I mean, the first one was probably the one I liked the least. It was an introduction. It was
the feta?
This one here, the number one.
You're on
I'm holding a feta in my hand. It's delicious. I would add a little sea salt and finishing salt.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really delicious.
And
it's
that company is out of Greece.
Oh, it is out of Greece too?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's in it?
We have coconut oil, potato starch.
It's called Just Like Feta.
Yeah.
And it's from Vital Life. It's 100% vegan, obviously. And it's got coconut oil, potato starch, salt, and a few gluten and, So it's delicious. I really think it's a delicious feta. So anyway, love the feta. Next one, we have cultured vegan mods, obviously mozzarella copy, from Miyoko's Creamery in Sonoma. And that's also a tasty little piece of cheese, but probably not my favorite in terms of, for me personally. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a big fan.
That one's interesting. This is the most award-winning vegan cheeses out there. Yes, the Miyoko. So she, Miyoko Shinner, she's an award-winning celebrity chef who first wrote a book on vegan cheeses, which launched this career in cheeses, vegan cheeses.
Well, it's it doesn't between you and me, I love mozzarella, and it does not remind me as much of the mozzarella as the other cheese remind me of the other cheese. Mm-hmm. Next one, Kite Hill. Ricotta. Delicious ricotta cheese. I think it's really, really good. I mean, I'm surprised.
And it has the same properties that ricotta has, which I kind of like. Whereas the mozzarella struggles to get to that, you know, that stretchy property that mozzarella tends to have.
And I'm pretty sure that, I don't know, I have not tried it, but I'm pretty sure if I melt that mozzarella, it's not going to become the same thing of what I'm thinking of melting mozzarella.
Mm-hmm.
Ricotta, Kite Hill, delicious.
Yeah.
We have a grated Parmesan from Vio Life also, so that's a second cheese from Vio Life. It's good. It's missing a little piquant for me. Like, I need my mozzarella to have a little kick, but it's very delicious.
Your Parmesan, you mean. Yeah.
Parmesan.
Yeah.
But it's very delicious grated cheese. I would definitely use it. Next one, Tree Line as a tree nut cheese. So tree nut.
You know what that reminds me of is that that French boursin spreadable, herb-laced or garlic-laced cheese.
Yeah, it's exactly what it reminds me too. It reminds me of something you spread on your crackers, put that on the table for little poo-poos.
This one is, that's my favorite brand, and I use that a lot when making my favorite chickpea pasta, Bonza, which we'll have to do a tasting panel.
Mm-hmm.
Dollop of that, so delicious.
Yeah,
and
I can see.
You stir it in then?
You stir it in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see how it would be a good finishing cheese because it's got a little tanginess. It tastes like a fresh curd.
Yeah.
Which is kind of really nice job. And then the final one is Kite Hill again, but this one is a cream cheese. And I know, Tom, you love cream cheese. This is I think it's a very delicious cream cheese. It's got nice little flavors added to it, chives. It says it's got chives in it in this one.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a very nice, again, nice spread. You could put that on crackers. You could put that on many different things.
I don't know that if you were to blind taste me on that I could tell you that was a vegan cheese.
No,
compared to regular
cream
cheese. I would
not. The texture, the flavor.
Especially with the flavors in it, right?
The flavor, it's they've achieved the flavor to make it really tasting like a regular cheese, like a cream cheese.
The Kite Hill, they use mushroom extract to preserve the freshness. I don't know if that's anything to do with that flavor.
Uh-huh.
But I really liked that ingredient was
I think that's cheeses. Delicious. I mean, honestly, we started this by going, okay, well, honestly, this was a little bit, that number one, again, for me, was a little bit scary. When I tried that, I was like, oops.
So that's the follow your heart American-style cheese. And you made that into a grilled cheese. I will say the melt quality is really good on some of these ones that you've cooked.
Yeah.
The one that kind of bothers me a little bit personally is this Daiya cheddar-style shreds, because it tastes like tapioca. Like the melt is more like a tapioca melt rather than that kind of greasy, good you know, cheese melt.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But overall, definitely the bold cheese, absolutely. I mean, definitely take a picture of that, and I would recommend it because it's definitely a great product.
Yeah.
I had, honestly, I had no idea there was that many vegan cheeses on the market. This is impressive.
Yeah, there are so many. In 2018, it was a $12.7 billion industry.
Well, I'm not surprised, because once you try it, yeah, I can see how you would do it again.
Well, and it's going to double here in 2020. There's no doubt that it's already, from when the article I read, it's already close to double that now.
Right.
So I would imagine that trend line will continue.
It's funny because when I cook vegan, I don't know how you cook vegan, but when I cook vegan, I always think, you know, people come to the restaurant all the time, hey, do you have any vegan?
You know, like, you know how I cook vegan? I steam broccoli. No, I'm serious. I don't ever think of, like, manipulating food into something that it isn't.
That's exactly where I was going to go with that. I was going to go into, you know, when I think vegan, I don't think, oh, I'm going to go get something that's already made into a vegan lookalike or kind of like those cheeses, you know, they're delicious, but it doesn't come to my mind to do this. Instead, I'm going to take something that's naturally, that's in its shape and its form, and I'm going to cook that into a vegan dish. It's interesting how I don't think enough about, because these are great products. I mean, I wouldn't.
And I just think I'm just not going to add meat to it.
Correct.
That's how I think of vegan. Correct. I'm just not going to add meat to it. Yeah. I'm not going to cook it into something.
Correct.
Or try to be vegan in my head. I've never really thought that way. I guess to be more intentional about it, I should think that way. It's like,
well, yeah, because
how can I take every dish that I make and turn it into something more vegan?
Exactly.
And satisfy a craving for a big bite of steak or a crispy skinned duck or something. You know, I guess it would make some sense to try. For me, I love a good vegetable stir fry. You know, it's like I just love good veggies.
And I sell duo of cheeses at Luke every day. I mean, I could. I buy cheese. Why don't I buy vegan cheese? You know, that's the same idea. There's not much of a difference there. It's just I'm not as knowledgeable about this product. And it's very interesting. This is definitely not a torture today. This is very much a discovery and a great one for me.
Well, I would push back just a little bit on why you would buy the cheese part. It's because you are in a when you're buying artisanal cheese like that, you're talking about terroir. You're talking about aging qualities. You're talking about, you know, a lot of the what the rennet does to the milk curds. A little different in nature. Like that feta there, while it's perfectly good, it's just not at all feta.
Correct. Right? Yeah. And my point was not to replace the dairy cheese. My point is to say, why can't I have non-dairy cheese? You know, and because somebody will go, so I'm a vegan, and say, oh, I got a nice cheese tray for you. You know, or I mean, I would be very happy to present somebody who's vegan with that kind of cheese tray and some nice crustini olive oil, little sea salt, and go at it. You know, a little chutney of apple and apple vinegar and shallots.
Super fun, Amy. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
I know that was a lot of work. There's 9 different versions. If you want to see a picture of them, just go to our website, our Facebook page, and check in and see what we just tried. Up next, Caroline Wright is here from the Soup Club Cookbook. And we were lucky enough to be part of this in the last week or two. So looking forward to that on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Hot Stove Society Show. We are back in the kitchen at the Hot Stove Society Show. Tom Douglas.
And Thierry Rotureau, the chef in the hat.
We are lucky enough to be joined by Caroline Wright and the Soup Club Cookbook. During her college days in Paris, she fell in love with food and cooking and all those lovely things. And I'm going to let her tell her story because I think it's fascinating and fun. And have her tell us about the soup that she brought to the...
Tout d'abord, bonjour, Caroline.
Bonjour.
D'accord. I just want to make sure she was in France.
Oh, yeah.
Not in Paris, Illinois.
Welcome to the show, Caroline.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom, for having me. So, yeah, my story is, yes, I did fall in love with food in France. I went to college in Paris and then culinary school in the French countryside in Burgundy.
Where?
At La Varenne in, in Joigny.
Madame la Grande Bouffe,
Le Château de Fay.
Oui. Yeah, exactly.
Hey. Look in her cookbook, My Chateau Kitchen, my picture's in it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I love to be among... fellow love runners.
Well, I didn't actually. We rented her house, and there were, I don't know, what, a dozen or 15 of us or something that. And so we got to use all the kitchens while we were there.
Oh, it's such an amazing place. Mm-hmm. It was such a great place to go to school. So yeah, that was at the beginning of my food story. And then I went to work for Martha Stewart early on in my career. And then I, like, tootled around New York and for a long time. And then I moved here. And then when I moved here, unfortunately, I got sick kind of right away. Uh-huh. I unfortunately was diagnosed with brain cancer.
Lovely.
Yeah.
That's always fun.
Yeah, always fun.
Let's see. Let's have
but
dinner,
I'm here.
And then let's go have brain cancer.
So you know it ends okay. I'm here, you know. But so, yeah, I got really sick. And when I was really sick, people, like strangers, we had just moved here, brought me soup. And it was just this sort of magical thing. And the doctors gave me a year to live. And I'm like 3 years out and cancer free and doing great. So I.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I guess I should say merci. but. So yeah, it's I feel like it's this magical substance that's this elixir of life, and so I started this soup club here in town for my friends, just like making soup for people who made soup for me as sort of a thanks for my survival. And then I wrote this book, Soup Club, and as also kind of a thanks to them and to share the soup love.
That's very sweet.
That's very cool.
Soup is one of those magical things.
It is.
I got to say, I came late to soup in my life, to the real enjoyment of soup. It wasn't until I started eating pho that I fell in love with soup. Because first, I don't know why.
It's funny because when I grew up, obviously I grew up in France, every meal, except in the summertime, every meal started with soup.
That's so lovely.
You start with soup and then you have a small entree and all... You know, salad or, I don't know, something else. But definitely you start the meal with a soup. And there was always something, like there was always a pot on the fire, you know, like the soup was always like, oh, there was a big pot and then we had the same soup for 2-3 days in a row, you know?
Sure.
And so, like, you know, Terry, just to clarify, so when you say soup, are you saying like when your mom had beef bones in the pot?
No,
did you just have broth then for your soup, or was it always a made soup?
So the only time we had clear broth like that mm-hmm. was when she would make pot-au-feu. Then she would have a beautiful broth, and we'd take that, and she would bring that to a boil, throw in some vermicelli in there. Mm-hmm. That was the soup.
Okay,
that would be the beginning of the dinner. But in most cases, it was pureed vegetable or dice, you know, big diced vegetable, and that's what it was. Whatever was in season. And funny enough, on my way to the radio show this morning, I talked to my mom every time I come to the radio show. And she was cutting pumpkins that she just got from a friend and making a soup.
Nice. Mm.
And she said, in France now they have butternut squash. I said, it is hilarious to hear my mother say butternut. And I said, what is butternut? And she goes... Oh, it's you know, you have them in America. And I go, oh, butternut. Now I know what it feels like to have an accent.
So, Caroline, all your recipes are vegan, is
they
that true?
They are. Uh-huh. It was really interesting to hear you guys talk about vegan cheese because, they're all vegan, and I'm actually not a vegan. But I did, when I was diagnosed, I started to eat really strangely for me as a food professional. I took on a very restricted diet. Mm-hmm. You know, given a year to live with two small children, you'll grasp at any straw you can, right?
Exactly.
And, it, you know, it's in the column of can't hurt, could help, you know? So that's why I decided to do vegan soup. Is just it celebrates like the most restricted diet that I can think of, and it's naturally like gluten free and you know easy to make nut free. So it just felt like a very great challenge, and I think it's. And so I love that you ate soup as part of you know a bigger meal. These soups, I was really challenging myself to make them like stews and really hearty. And I have this soup club that I feed some like you know. really athletic dads are in this group, and I'm like convincing them to eat, you know, a really healthful, delicious seasonal plate of like a bowl of, you know, vegetables and beans and mm-hmm. like high in protein that come from different places. So it's just really, it's like a very exciting, fun challenge.
So what was the most challenging part of doing vegan soups?
I think it's that, is squeezing in, you know, like cool flavors. So I run the soup for like the club for like 9 months, and I don't repeat a soup, and they're all original soups. Every week is different. So it's just the challenge was in the beginning coming up with those original recipes. But what I did was either studied, you know, same as any recipe I would develop in my career. Like, you know, you study a vegetable particularly. Like, I have a nearly retro cabbage soup, for example. So, like, the cabbage soup diet, I was kind of playing a joke on that, and I, like, totally pulled it apart and added, like, doubled down on the cabbage. I really love cabbage and coconut oil, like, seared together. I think it's a beautiful flavor. It makes it kind of silky and velvety. Mm-hmm. And so I seared it, and I added, like, ginger, and I totally teased out, like, the, you know, 1950s diet recipe into being this like chunky and funky weird, you know, big soup and with Brussels sprouts and stuff in it. So
my mom would be laughing because that's the kind of soup we had. She was not dicing anything in Brunoise, I can tell you that.
Yeah, totally.
Or if you go down to Taitung in Chinatown, right?
Yeah,
and
you know,
every meal starts with a cabbage and onion water, basically. There's no such thing as, I shouldn't say no such thing. It wouldn't have stock in it, right? It would be water, and then you develop the flavor out of the cooked cabbage and the onions.
And that was something when I first started Soup Club, because I had just finished my Catalan food book, and I was doing one recipe for that, and it had stock in it. So I, you know, did all the stock and making soup essentially to make soup again. For like that volume that I was doing, 65 quarts a week, so it just was impossible. So all of my soups start with water.
Yeah. And I don't think it's a bad place to begin, because certainly adds an importance to how you procure your vegetables, right? And what you're buying, and caramelization of your vegetables and things like that really change water into stock.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Create layers of flavor. Make vegetable stock, too. That's cool. You know, making a vegetable stock is a very good thing to do. Mushroom stock.
For sure.
You have so many mushrooms. They're flavors, full of flavor when you start taking mushrooms, especially wild mushroom. You get so much flavor out of that.
Yep.
It's easy.
Which are about 90% water anyway. So, So Caroline, somebody's going to buy your book. It's called the Caroline Wright and the Soup. What is it? It's called the Soup Club.
You can go to soupclubcookbook.com right now. The Kickstarter is actually still running. Uh-huh. So, you can find everything there. And you can find me at carolinewrightfood.com.
And the club part, how do you become a member? Because I'm curious about that.
You have to be a friend of mine, really. And I do. I have to say, I have two very good friends who have been a long-standing member of her soup club. I spoke with them last week, and they look forward every Sunday. They have two little ones, and every Sunday it is Soup Sunday, and the kids go wild, and they said it's absolutely delicious. So please go check them out. It's a wonderful club. It's a wonderful, beautiful cookbook. So be sure to go check it out.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much.
Your story
and good luck.
And your cookbook.
Thank you.
And thanks again for sharing soup with us last week. That was awesome. Up next, we have another full hour for you. We're excited about that. Lots of things coming in the second hour. I'll get into that when we come back from the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. It's the chef and the chapeau. Hello, chef.
Hello, Tom Douglas. How are you doing?
Good. Are you ready for hour number two?
I am ready for hour number two. There's so much going on.
So much going on. We're going to visit Chicago.
Yes.
In our minds. We're going to return, have the return, and celebrate the return of the talented pastry chef Brittany Bartleben for the Baker's Corner. And we're going to finish up with some food for thought, tasty trivia. First, let's jump right into chicken pot pie. We are back in the chicken pot pie business at SeaTown. You know, we were just a market and fish fry house there for a month or so, and now we started adding back a few items to the menu that were favorites before COVID closures. And one of those is chicken pot pie. And
how popular is that?
Well, so far, It's very popular.
Right.
You know, it's not super busy at all. So
do
not,
you sell them hot?
Yeah, we sell them baked. Chicken pot pie baked.
Ready
we sell
to go.
Them frozen, too.
Okay.
Yeah. So
because I
the
think
thing
it's a,
is.
Sorry. I think it's a product that I would buy frozen and use when I need, unless I was really hungry on the spot. But
yeah.
I think it's a great product to buy and put in your freezer because it's a little bit of a pain in the neck to make.
It's a big pain in the neck to make, I got to tell you.
So it's kind of like Boeuf Bourguignon. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's delicious to eat, but man,
yeah.
Who wants to endeavor that? So it, you put it in your freezer and you have it ready to go. And since they freeze so well, it's a great, great thing. I mean,
here's the thing about chicken pot pie that it's a frustration and it's a beauty.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to the grocery store and buy banquet chicken pot pie. Sometimes you can buy 10 for $10. Right? Or, you know, those little Swanson pot pies. And frankly, they were always in the freezer. Jackie's in my freezer when we had Loretta as a youngster. One of their go-to when it was mom and daughter night to be home. I was cooking at the restaurants. Sometimes they would, their thing was pulling out a beef pot pie and a baked potato. They would make a baked potato and a beef pot pie. And so I think pot pie, in a funny way, has this reputation of being cheap food. It should be inexpensive. It should be... You know, all this stuff, right, that makes it frustrating. So I like that, and I like that it's cheap food, but it makes it frustrating when you try to do a good one.
Well, I think...
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think more and more people are going to discover, they're going to be forced to discover that there is no such thing as cheap food. There is less expensive
good
items,
food.
But good food is not cheap.
And good for you food. So, point being... We have these chicken pot pies, and, you know, on the menu at SeaTown, we're barely making a profit, and I think they're $16. And people say to me, you know, $16 for a chicken pot pie? You know, they refuse, or I shouldn't say they refuse, they just don't understand the effort that goes in to making stock to make your gravy, right? You know, it takes chicken bones and... It takes time.
It's a lot of labor.
And tons of labor.
And if you're not doing 10 million of them in a factory, you don't have the same model.
Right. And so it takes a lot of effort and expense to get organic vegetables, right? Yeah. To put a decent amount of chicken in there, right?
Right.
To use real mushrooms and to make the gravy and to make an all butter crust, right? And to all the things that is going to make that. It's what makes our coconut cream pie different, right?
Exactly.
You can go to... the grocery store and buy a $5 or $7.99 coconut cream pie.
Right.
And yet hundreds of people every week buy mine at $42.
Right.
And when you taste the pie next to each other, you recognize, your body just naturally recognizes the difference in quality of the ingredients.
Right.
And the realness of the ingredients.
Right.
So it's the same thing with chicken pot pie.
Well, I mean,
it takes forever.
If we're going to start comparing price and what you get for your money... At $16, getting a chicken pot pie like that, like you make, and with all the ingredients that you put in it, versus getting, let's use a burger at McDonald's.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you look at what you're getting in terms of goodness for your body, you're not comparing apple and oranges anymore. You're just...
Yeah, and so then there's the other question, right, on top of that. Well, yeah, it's real ingredients, but there's a lot of rich real ingredients in our chicken pot pie. Lots of butter in the crust, right? Lots of gravy, which is rich and typically heavy in fat, right? That's how you make the roux and then you make the gravy. And the fresh goodness part is the vegetables and
the chicken,
the simmered chicken and things things of that nature. So it is a difficult conversation sometimes. And so we have these frozen pot pies. They're like $15 or $16. You take home, bake for yourself. And you just see the eyeball. It's kind of go wise, like $16, and I still have to cook it myself.
Yeah. Well,
but I got to tell you, I just had it the other day. It is a delicious chicken pot pie.
Yeah,
and it is. You have to make that choice. You just said, right? You have to make a choice.
It's a choice you have to make. It's not about, you know. I don't argue with the people how much they charge. What I have to decide is, do I want that or do I not want it, and can I afford it?
Yeah,
you know. And if I can't afford a $16 chicken pot pie, I'm lying to myself because I'm going to buy a burger for $20.
Well, I would say that there are items on the grocery store shelf that are inexpensive.
Correct.
In a category where, like, for example, when you want to make homemade potato chips, really good, right?
Oh, delicious.
And not always, but mostly really good.
Right.
But I would say you know, to make a homemade bag of 8 ounce bag of potato chips is 5 times the cost of buying a bag of Lay's potato chips.
Oh, I would say at least 5 times. Yeah.
Yeah. And so to me, the difference between the Lay's and the homemade chips is not there 5 times.
Correct.
And so you have to kind of go through your, it's like buying frozen pastry dough or puff pastry. It's so much cheaper to buy that Dufour brand frozen puff pastry at the grocery store. And it's a pretty darn good product.
Right.
It is not. I mean, it costs 5 times, if you were to add labor, 5 times more to make your own.
Yeah.
It's way closer to the value of being a great product as it is making your own.
Right.
And so there are other areas where, like, I find it hard to find a soup at the grocery store that's as good as making a soup of my own, and they are about the same price.
Correct.
To make or to purchase.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's funny. So, but it really caught my attention when we were talking about the price of the pot pies, and I got questioned on it from a customer, and it's like, I don't know what to say. This is what it cost.
You know what? It's not an argument. It's just a matter of that's what it costs, and that's what you have to charge.
Yeah.
I mean,
and so people just choose whether or not to buy it or not.
Correct,
and then then you choose to leave it on the menu or to take it off
or
those kind of things. But it's always a choice that way.
Mm-hmm. But a good chicken pot pie is something you should always have in your freezer ready to go.
I just love them. But I really love them with a big salad right next to them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I
make you feel less guilty.
Well, they're so rich and so delicious. But that big salad just really makes you feel like, okay, now I've really done something good for myself. Guess who's in the house?
Oh, I don't know. Who's in the house?
Not going to tell you until we get to her segment.
Okay.
When we come back on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society on Cairo Radio. Tom Douglas here.
And Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
Chef in the hat. Let's take a trip.
Yes.
Last week, we mentally went to New Orleans. We're going to start visiting some cities that you and I have a ton of history in, but that we haven't been able to go to for quite a while. And, you know, you and I get to reminisce on our favorite places. Madeline, who doesn't travel as much as we do, is going to tell us some places that she can't wait to go to in Chicago when the time comes back up. And, frankly, I should probably break out of my rut and start going to some new places. But, God, I love some of the old ones so much.
Oh, yeah. The classics are the classics.
All right. Let's talk Chicago. What would be the first thing you would do if you were getting off a plane at O'Hare right now and heading towards the city?
Diner on Randolph, where there is about 3 or 4 of a restaurant down there. And the diner, I was there once, and I had a breakfast that was a typical Chicago breakfast, I call it, because it's definitely full, healthy breakfast. The pancake, the eggs, the bacon, beautifully done bacon. It was more like a pork belly piece. It was absolutely fantastic. And I thought, you know, if I was to do breakfast, that's how I would want to do breakfast. The diner style, but
really? That's
up to date.
That surprises me.
It does? Then yeah. I would want to do breakfast?
Well, breakfast number one, but also that kind of classic American breakfast.
Well, I mean, I think that all those beautiful things, if they're done correctly... Mm-hmm. I think they're delicious, but I think all of those have suffered throughout the generation, and they have changed, you know, and they have changed in many cases, not for the better. You know, I mean, if you make a really good breakfast with good eggs, good, everything made from scratch, you know, it's delicious. Mm-hmm. And a healthy breakfast, like you always say, is, you know, something good.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how healthy it is, but.
There's so many places on my list that I would like to get back to. Of course, visiting our friend Rick Bayless at the Frontier would be awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's Tupelo Bombo. I'm not sure both are still open in that space or if he just has Frontiera.
I do believe I read that he had both of them open.
Okay. The Frontiera, you know, he's got the famous cooking show on Channel 9 over the many, many years now. And I got to be chef with him for the Marshall Field / Macy's group for 15 years.
Right.
He's a super nice man, and I look forward to seeing him every time. I would say the most dynamic restaurateur that I've spent time with in Chicago is Paul Kahn.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, he's got a few restaurants that I just think are top-notch. And I would I never go to Chicago. I mean, this is literal. I never go to Chicago without visiting Avec.
Right.
And one of the ways I get there is sometimes I'm just there for the one night, and I've got responsibilities, you know, especially when I was with Macy's, responsibilities to do this and that at one of their stores, so you don't really get to have dinner. You have it with the team, or you have it at the store or whatever. But Avec is open late. And so I would often end up there at 11:30 or midnight. And you sit at a counter, and they have a double wood-fired oven, a double-doored wood-fired oven so that you can see the flames. You sit at the counter, and it's just it's the tiniest kitchen. And two people running it, and the prep kitchen is down in the basement. And I love – I mean, if you go back and look at the Palace when we first opened, still to this day, we never made our waiters wear uniforms. Right. They wore civilian clothes. Mm-hmm. And they do that there, too. And I just love the feeling. It feels like you have your neighbor waiting on you in a really homey, good
you're
kind
in
of
in
way.
In a neighborhood restaurant.
In a good way. Yeah. You know, nice dress and you know, or pants or whatever. I just love the feeling of that restaurant. The bad part is it's the most uncomfortable seating in the world. It's the chairs are made out of one-inch
very,
thick plywood.
Yeah, I know. It's
super
very...
hard benches. The good news for them is nobody can sit there very long, and they're really busy, so they keep
and it's also
the
very noisy.
Yeah.
It's a tiny,
super
long place.
Super noisy, but well-designed, and it was right next to the very famous his first restaurant called Blackbird.
Yeah.
Which I did a couple of dinners at when I was on book tour.
Yeah, which he closed now.
Yeah, it's all closed. Yeah. If you want Have more you of his restaurants, the Publican.
Yeah, Public.
Big Star, Taqueria. He's got so many, and so delicious. I find him to be one of the best restaurateurs in America.
Yeah,
so.
And when I go to Chicago, I usually go for a couple of days, 2-3 days. I always try to make one stop at one of my ex-boss from my original first coming to the U.S. in Chicago. I worked at a restaurant called La Fontaine, and one of the owners was Jean-Claude Poilvé, who, sadly enough, died a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And I always try to make a stop at one of his restaurants. He has Le Bouchon on Damon Street, close to where Charlie Trotter used to be. Mm-hmm. And he has another one called La Sardine, which is right next to the studio of Miss Oprah.
Huh.
So it was one of those two spots. Definitely, if you like French bistro food, it is 101 classic.
Mm-hmm.
Delicious food.
La Sardine.
Not complete. La Sardine and Le Bouchon. Le Bouchon is a tiny, small spot on Damon, and La Sardine is a little bit bigger, but very small restaurant. So I recommend one of those two restaurants for a classic French. You know, you go in there, you can have tarte Allemandine and crème caramel and, you know, things like this, like very traditional French bistro food.
You'll laugh at this, and I want to get Maddie's take on where she wants to go when she gets. But the last time I was in Chicago, one of the last meals I had there, at the Ralph Lauren store on the Miracle Mile. And we had big fat martinis at the bar. The bar seats about six people, maybe eight or six at the bar, but maybe eight total. And it's a very much a classic Ralph Lauren look. And the martinis were huge. Yeah, it was hard to get up and walk after one martini.
And also quickly, Takashi.
Oh, Takashi.
Noodle spot.
If it's still open. I'm not sure.
The Slurping Turtle is still open downtown.
All right, Madeline, you've heard where we would go, kind of celebrating the past. What resonates with you when you look at online and say, okay, I'm planning the trip to Chicago?
There's a lot of really great new restaurants. I've actually been fortunate to go to Chicago quite a bit in my past life of different jobs and careers. I love Sepia, which is right around the corner from Avec. Yeah. Arthur Hahn was the wine director there, who is the most generous sommelier in the country. He's just a sweetheart. He's now moved to New York, but I do love my friends at Sepia, as well as Big Star. Just one of my favorites, but I could spend a whole afternoon there just sitting outside. But there are some very cool things that have opened up, including what I'm most excited about. There is the cult hero known as the Tamale Guy. And unfortunately, he got a bad bout of COVID, but he has been discharged. And while he was in the hospital, a lot of friends rallied. They kept the tamales delivery alive. They did a Kickstarter, and now he has his own brick and mortar with delicious tamales. He's famous for this salsa Verde that everybody goes crazy over. So it's supposed to be a wonderful spot. Also, Amy's favorite artist, Wiz Khalifa, is here. He has opened up a takeout-only joint during the pandemic, but he has a lot of delicious, what he calls stoner food. So burnt ends. He has fried hot Cheeto mac and cheese bites close to our hearts here. It's delicious. It's a lot of fun. So there's a lot of cool things going on in Chicago. I think they're takeouting.
Stick to what he does best, I think.
But I'm excited to go back. It's a great, great food town. And I think there's some fun things.
Awesome.
Yeah, there's fun things coming up.
Well, I can't wait. I've just booked my first trip abroad. To Phoenix next
abroad.
Month. It goes over some river, I'm sure. So. Up next, we're excited to welcome back Brittany Bartleben to the Baker's Corner. We're really looking forward to trashing her after that in the Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's time for the Baker's Corner. We're welcoming back our long-lost friend, Brittany Bartleben.
Hello.
Left our comfy confines of the Dahlia Bakery and off on to the Metropolitan Market stores. Specifically, you're at the Queen Anne one, right?
I'm currently at the Queen Anne. I'm going to be jumping back and forth between Queen Anne and Mercer Island pretty soon here. Because we're going to divide up our production team a little bit because we're just getting too big for that little space.
And you have a brand new Mercer Island store to work in.
Beautiful store. Yeah. My kitchen has subway tiles and new equipment. It's very exciting.
Are you saying that your kitchen at the Dahlia didn't have subway tiles?
Mine had orange walls.
The answer is no.
It was well worn and loved.
Yes, it was. Indeed it was. And matter of fact, it's in exactly the same spot that it was when you left.
Yes, I noticed.
Back in March. Yeah. sad but true.
Yeah.
People should shop at Met Market. I know we're selling our pies there.
Mochi donuts. People are really excited about that. It's so nice to see those products there because it does feel like
home.
It feels like home. Seeing those sheet trays with coconut and white chocolate on them, it's like,
And then our newest product, Terry, I don't know if I told you this or not, but our wood-fired Serious Pie pizza crust.
We are now so excited about
are
that.
Are they selling?
Selling. They're doing great. It's great. And it works great to just like take it home and pan sear it and serve it as naan or something.
Yeah.
It's a really versatile product.
It's very different than what's in the marketplace, I would say, especially like when you consider Boboli's or...
I told you I was excited about it. When you said that, I was like, hey, you know what? It makes total... I would have that in my freezer.
It makes total sense.
I would have that in my freezer.
Even you.
Me even
more.
Wow,
I am
so
honored.
Just like the take-home easy dinners these days. Yeah. It's what a lot of people are relying on when they don't want to spend the money on takeout, and going out to restaurants isn't necessarily an option.
Well, you know, if it's raining outside, pouring, you don't turn on the barbecue, but you get grilled bread in the freezer, you throw that in the oven for a minute, and then everything is back to life like if nothing happened.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to why you're here, which is apples and cheese.
Apples and cheese. I have some humble pie to eat.
I like that.
Yeah.
Believe me.
It's got apple.
I hope you feel the same after.
It's got apple in it?
I hope you feel the same after
It has apples in it. It has apples. So I've always had an attitude in regards to serving cheese with an apple dessert. Barb, our old bakery manager, would always get me to do it, and I would tell her where she could go with that idea. But we have this really cool mammoth cheddar available right now. It came in a 1,000 pound, I mean, I guess you could call it a wheel. It was more, it was bigger than Tom.
It's a truck.
It was a giant barrel.
Hopefully it was four times my size.
She said 1,000 pounds.
It's huge. And it's from this 100-year-old creamery in Wisconsin called Henning's. And they're a family-owned creamery, and they're the only creamery in the United States that can make wheels that are larger than 75 pounds. So, I mean, this thing was enormous.
So when you make I don't know if you know the answer, but when you make a wheel that big, how long does it take to actually settle down and become hard and all that stuff? I mean,
this is a very young cheddar that we have.
Yeah, it must be.
I don't have the exact year, but it's very young. It took two cheesemongers to cut into, but it's lovely. It's mild and creamy. It's a great melter. Makes an amazing grilled cheese. They've got a bacon and grilled cheese sandwich at the delis right now that's really delicious. But what I did is I took some home with some of these incredible heirloom apples that we've got. I brought a variety of them to show you.
And they are from Heirloom Orchards in Hood River, Oregon. And there's, I mean, you can see they're kind of little and some of them are funky looking, but they're delicious. My favorite is this one right here. It's the Mutsu. And this is the one that I worked with.
How do you spell that?
M-U-T-S-U.
Mutsu.
And it kind of, Tom, you might know this. You've been to Chelan a lot. It kind of reminds me of the apples that you see on the side of the road in Chelan that they have, like, the honor system that you buy. You put the money in the box.
So it's got enough acid balance.
It's got a nice acidity. It looks like a Golden Delicious. It doesn't eat like a Golden Delicious. Uh-huh. It's got an acidity, but not quite so tart as...
Firm texture.
Not as tart as a Golden Delicious or as a Granny Smith. It's an amazing baking apple. So I made an apple cobbler over the weekend, and I tied in some of this, our signature fresh-pressed apple cider, which is a nut. It's absolutely delicious. That's another one we've got available through the holidays. And I've talked about this before, where you reduce the apple cider, and it becomes liquid gold.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So,
like a syrup, right?
Like you reduce it to almost down level. To a syrup. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would just, I added that to my sautéed Mutsu apples. As we've talked about this as well, I always gently pre-cook any apples that I'm going to make a pie or a cobbler with, because that way you can control the amount of crunch that they've got.
Right.
To
and also the moisture comes
and the moisture,
out a
little bit. So, you know, I would saute these apples in brown butter and then deglaze it with my cider reduction. Mm. It's a little bit of an extra step, but it's
Calvados?
Like, what's that?
You put any Calvados in
it? I didn't have any Calvados, Thierry, and I was really upset about that, actually. Yeah.
It really kicks it up another notch.
That would have been amazing.
Okay, let's go back then to the cheddar.
Yes.
Because, you know, you could add that cheddar to your pie crust or to your biscuit dough or
and
to whatever.
And that's what I did.
That's what you did.
To my biscuit crust, uh-huh. And it created these amazing little pockets. It's not an overly salty cheese, but it created these melty little pockets. And because my thing with cheese and apples was, it's like, where does the ice cream go? I want the ice cream.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just put the ice cream on top of that. It was delicious. It was so good.
Cheese
do not
like
tell
that,
Barb.
Honestly, that kind of real soft, kind of melty
sweet,
cheddar
creamy.
Is literally just almost like butter.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
and it's got the same melting qualities. Yes. It's got the same fat ratio.
Yes.
I shouldn't say the same, but it's similar, right?
Yes.
And so that's why it works.
And I treated it like butter. I grated it and then I froze it for just a few minutes till it was really, really cold, and just incorporated that into my biscuit topping.
Just like you would butter.
Just like you would butter. I didn't cut back on the butter in my biscuit topping. And that was
so
not
cheddar
a problem.
And butter.
Yeah, exactly. It was, it had a nice, and it was a cornmeal crust. So it was a cheddar cornmeal apple cobbler.
And rich. Ooh.
Oh,
nice.
It was incredible. I mean, my kid can't eat it because he can't have dairy, but I pretty much ate it all.
So did
myself.
You eat it right in front of him then? It's,
oh, yeah, you know it.
With extra ice,
anyway,
extra ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, I got some cheese for you that we just tested in the previous segment. Vegan cheeses.
If you weren't such a mean mom, you could get them like tofu-y.
Tofu-y. You know, we do use the tofu-y cream cheese a lot. As like, I'd make an Alfredo out of it. Yeah, I'm not that mean. but yeah, I can't recommend these and this cheese enough. Even just eating it with the apples, it's delicious. But try it in a grilled cheese or a biscuit topping. It's delicious. Right. Yeah.
It sounds really delicious.
Yeah.
The apples are a funny thing. You know, apples come and go in styles, varieties, names are really important.
Yeah.
And looks of apples.
Yes.
So you look at an heirloom apple like that, and it has to come from a specialty orchard because nobody grows them anymore.
Exactly.
Because everyone's on to the newest, hottest Cosmic Crisp or Honey Crisp or whatever the next one
the
is.
The Rave Apple, that's the next one too.
It is important to save these varieties, right?
It is. It's a piece of history. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're absolutely delicious. I mean, what I've noticed with these Cosmic Crisps and the Rave Apples and the Honey Crisp, they're tasty. They're a good apple. They're enormous. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think there's something to these like little tiny funky looking apples. It's the way they were meant to be.
Yeah.
The way nature intended.
But you could also see why they went away, because when you line those up in a grocery store next to all the pretty apples.
Exactly.
What's going to sell,
eyes.
Right?
Yeah. So the Mutsu, I think, kind of walks that line of being a nice, it's not a tiny apple. Mm-hmm. It's not beautiful because it's a yellow apple, but it's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times they use these heirloom varieties to make hard ciders or to, you know, they'll mix 10 or 20 varieties. It's astonishing when I drive back and forth to Prosser and the farm to see the apple trucks going along the roadway of how many you can read as you pull up next to them. You can read the varieties and it's astonishing.
I've lost count of how many there are. This cider alone has 20 different varieties of apples in it.
And that's not untypical for cider.
That's not untypical. That's very, very normal. Uh-huh. So, yeah, we've gone crazy with our apples, and I'm here for it. I love it.
If you go over to Eastern Washington right now, I know I see it just through the traffic, but a lot of families are heading over the mountains. There are some you-pick places where you can actually go out to the orchards. You pick a variety of apples, or they'll pick them for you, and take them to the press.
Yeah.
And you'll press them right there. You can get your pumpkins at the same time.
Which is such a cool thing to do on a fall day.
Get your raw cider, get your pumpkins.
Your apple cider donuts.
And people keep saying, oh, we're not going to have Halloween. Well, you have your own Halloween.
The last one that we went to this last week, we thought about leaving because there was a big sign out front saying, please feel free not to wear a mask.
And, you know, oh, no.
It's funny how our state turns red. Like,
when you go over the mountains.
Over the bridges, even. Yeah. You get over it. Not even to the mountains, but our state turns very bright red as you go over the mountains. And it's okay. It is what it is. But it's just interesting that some of the things we're going through these days has become a political statement, whether you wear a mask or not. It's not really...
It's kind of
silly,
isn't it?
It gets lost on the fact that I'm just trying not to get you sick, in case I happen to be sick, you know. Or so it's a weird world out there. Yeah. How we all feel differently about these things. Thank you for coming.
Of course, thank you for having
me. Always a pleasure.
I miss you so much.
And then we're going to try and do this a little bit more often, maybe a couple times a month, or we'll figure something out, and then
we'll make it work.
Tell the folks at Met Market we appreciate them letting us have you for a minute.
They were very excited.
Okay, good.
You guys, we're good partners with you.
And are you going to stay so that Terry and I can beat the crap out of you?
I'll stick around. Yeah,
ooh, easy time. Easy. Yep. She's
we're
going
to get her.
Ooh, I got.
I don't know, guys.
Out of practice.
I don't know.
I got bad memory of a.
It could
big
go
meeting.
Either way. I'm
she's
a little rusty, but I'm also hungry for blood.
All right, up next, Food for Thought, tasty trivia, where Tom and Terry trounce Chef Brittany Bartolabin on Cairo Radio 97.3 and the Hot Stove Society. Welcome back to the final segment of the Hot Stove Society show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in hats.
Thanks for listening wherever you are, whether it's in your garden, your kitchen, or on the radio. Madeline, tell people how we play this game, and then make sure you give me the easiest questions.
Always. Not
That's
a
how
problem.
He wants to win, huh?
Exactly. We are thrilled to have Brittany stay. We do three rounds of five questions each. Whoever gets the most questions right gets to send our lucky winner a prize. We are doing the brand new Rub With Love Harvest 3-pack this week for our lovely winner, Diane Cannon, who commented on our tasting panel a couple weeks ago. So we're very excited to send her. This is our Rub With Love 3-pack, includes the veggie rub, the roast rub, and the turkey rub, a perfect cabinet must-have for all your holiday cooking.
And I believe you can get those at your local Bartell stores through the holiday season.
Yep.
And I should remind you that this tasty trivia is brought to you by Rub With Love, handcrafted versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. Look for Rub With Love products in your local grocery store, online, in butcher shops, Bartels, my buddy Stan, Amazon, some Costco's even have them. Or you can find them online at tomdouglas.com.
Awesome. Terry, you are up first. Are you ready, sir?
I am so ready.
Okay, your first question. Which Italian pasta cooking term can be literally translated into English as to the tooth?
Al dente.
Oh, bravo. Correct. All right, question two.
Did
Hendrix.
You say, oh, bravo?
Like said, bravo.
She said, bravo.
She said,
bravo.
I said, ah, awesome. Bravo. Yeah.
Bravo, bravissimo.
Hendrix, Larios, and Seagram's are some of the best-selling brands
1970s rock stars.
Which selling spirit?
Gin.
Correct. Amy's favorite beverage of
just
choice
so you
over
know,
here.
Just so you know, I drink and drinks.
Ah, wonderful. Good to know. Navarin is a type of French stew, including which type of meat?
Lamb, navarin d'agneau.
Beautiful. I said lamb or mutton.
Why don't you ask him, like, can he count to 10 in French or something? Why don't you ask him, like,
I give him
question.
All the easiest questions
say,
and save the hard
in French.
Ones for you. All right. From which country does Gouda cheese originate from? And I will say the real Gouda, not non-dairy Gouda.
Right. From Holland.
The Netherlands.
Yes, that's also the other name for it.
Correct. Which vegetable has varieties name White Icicle, Sparkler, and Cherry Bell?
I'm going to go with White icy corn. What the heck? I know. I was going to say there's got to be like either a root like of some kind that has many different white icy corn. Yeah, I'm going to go with radish. That's
that is correct.
Oh, that is?
Well done. Woo-hoo.
Congratulations,
Tom,
chef.
Thank you so much.
Yay. Here's for the assist.
Oh, yeah. Great assist.
Anything to take down Bartoleba.
All right, Brittany. Welcome back. Are you warmed up?
I'm feeling very ganged up on, actually.
I know. Well, Terry just got 5 for 5.
All right. Let's do this.
All right. Which controversial food translates into English as fatty liver?
The duck liver, the foie gras.
Correct. 1 for 1. There you go. Yes. Benjamin Franklin is quoted as saying, an egg today is better than a blank tomorrow.
I don't know. An egg today is better than a hangover?
Tom, do you know the
answer? That's a fair answer.
Not tomorrow.
A hen.
A hen,
an egg today is better than a hen
I like
tomorrow.
Hangover better.
So there you go. Okay.
I'll take the hen any day.
Which dessert is also sometimes called a Tuscan trifle?
A Tuscan, is it zuppa inglese? No. Oh, well, excuse me.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Assist for Brittany.
Assist, please.
The cake, lots of booze.
Oh, it's tiramisu.
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
I was trying to assist and I couldn't even remember the name.
I was overthinking it.
Yeah, you overthinking
it. I overthinking.
That's okay. Pavlova is a famous dessert named after a Russian ballerina.
Anna Pavlova.
Correct.
Yes.
That was her first name. That was the question. Wow.
I know that one.
Oh, that was
Here we go. Last question. Bagnacotta is a dish of garlic, anchovies, olive oil, and butter, which originates from which country?
Sounds Italian.
That is correct. Italy. There you go.
Marcella has 5.
Right, Tom.
The first one I ever made.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right. Are you ready?
Of course I'm ready.
5 out of 5, Tom.
From which country does Brahma beer originate from?
Brahma beer is the same country as the Brahma bull, so I'm going to say Argentina.
Ooh, close. Brazil.
Brazil.
Okay, 0 points for Tom.
0 points.
What are the two main ingredients of a dark and stormy cocktail, Tom?
Oh, dark and stormy. Spiced rum and ginger beer.
I'll give you that. Dark rum and ginger beer is the correct answer, but we'll give it to you anyway. What are devils on a horseback?
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
What food item is nicknamed devils on a horseback?
Is that oysters?
Even Amy got
oysters
this.
Oysters or scallops? I can't remember
I think
which
it's
one.
Oysters, no?
Dates wrapped in bacon.
Dates?
What?
Dates are prunes wrapped in bacon.
Oh,
I think it was oysters or scallops wrapped in bacon.
You are...
And what did you mean when you said even Amy knows this one? Are you suggesting that your co-producer is not up to the task?
No, I just feel like she's very knowledgeable on weird, kitschy, nicknamed food items like that. That's all. With love. With love.
She backed out of that one, didn't she? Yeah.
All right. Which meat dish literally translates in from Italian as jumps in the mouth?
Oh, which meat dish jumps in the mouth? I'm going to say jumps in the mouth.
So something with bocca, maybe?
It's either spicy or it's...
I think your Thierry lended a very nice hint.
Bocca is mouth. So...
Osso buco.
Yeah.
Saltimbocca.
Saltimbocca.
Oh, what? Oh, really?
You said bocca.
I know.
I thought he was going to get it. All right, your last question. You're doing really poorly here.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
How old does a sheep have to be before its meat is classified as mutton?
2 years.
That is correct.
Name and full
well
number
done.
Of the mother.
All right, Thierry, I believe you won this round. Well done.
Who's our
and,
winner?
Our winner will receive a lovely 3-pack, Diane Cannon, our lovely listener. And she will receive our Revel Love Harvest 3-pack, including the veggie rub, roast rub, and turkey rub.
Yum. Way to go. If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook at Hot Stove Society Radio Show. You're listening to Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. This show is produced by our team, Madeline Dow Pennington and Amy Richardson. Sound and production by Sean McFadden. And our senior editor is Sean, don't call me Del Torre. Also, remember, if you missed any episode of our Hot Stove Society show on Cairo, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening and have a fabulous weekend.